Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is? Mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this, somebody shoots your family member. So of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
The weapon revolution, the premeditated scheme, introducing drugs on crack to a ghetto team. Got along for born niggas now, play what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless, with violent thoughts I'm hopeless. Got the devil petrified, hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside a paradise. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit dick, we block hit, or I drop stick. All hell, I don't bail, rap, let's apocalypse. Forever ghetto, necessary picture food stamp. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food stamp.
I'm a real live dick from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to box to back.
DJ
from my soldiers to death, when I fuck my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death, we got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world, who box to back. When my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death, when I fuck my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Play it, are you ready to see the war? It's the prophecy, survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets in time, yeah, any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary, damn, damn. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me, the struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay, so stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something that tough, all right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. The struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. You hear me, Eric?
Lodge, starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Career Line, Rail Train Ingredients. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional illiteracy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform from the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, reduce new African recidivism. Our overall goal is to transform the whole prison slave complex into the prison system, the biggest institutional learning in the world, you know, through educational means. I would like to salute everybody who's been currently educating themselves in the community and the environment and being a positive influence to other people around them, who are in the aspect of nation building, setting knowledge of self, being productive, being self-determined, showing self-respect, showing self-love, things of that nature. I'd like to salute all the cover behind enemy lines or still holding the line by currently educating themselves, creating design, booklet, programs, institutions, or so on to inspire the people around them, as well as the people on the outside. You know, I'd like to salute everybody who's been listening to our broadcast since 2014. You know, I also would like to make a couple of announcements before I go into the weeks of the events and history this week, then I'll bring on the guests. This weekend, that there's a Virginia Public African meet and greet that's taking place on the 19th at 6:30 to 8 o'clock p.m. at Mega Elberville, which is Jackson, Mississippi. It's going to take place at the African Art Gallery. It's located on 800 North Ferris Street, Megaville 39202. And this is a part of the PCC, People City Council of the Premier Republic of Africa, face-to-face meeting. There's a schedule for November 18th through November 20th. Also on November 19th, it's taking place in National Territory of the Certified District known as Dr. John Clark Town in Columbia, Georgia. We've had a nation building building expo. It's taking place November 19th from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. on 2503 Dawson Street, Columbia, Georgia, 31903.
Let's see, I think that's it. Also, I'll let everybody know that, you know, Georgia University is pushing a campaign called Never Let Them Forget campaign that is geared toward the New York Revolutionary Nationalist Political Prison on the West Coast, such as Matope Degoma, Abdul-Luba Shakir, Joker Hashima Jensei, Lewis Powell, Satawa, Baridi, and other comrades, and it also pushing the Strategic Release Initiative. And also, I'd like to read this statement from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement about the release of Dr. Matulam Shakir. Hold up. Shakir, 70-year-old grandfather, respected healer and elder, was granted parole by the U.S. Parole Commission. The Parole Commission has recognized that his release poses no risk, particularly in the light of his medical condition. He will be released shortly. Matulu is one of the 1,000 incarcerated older people in state and federal custody who have been repeatedly denied parole for over a decade after completing his minimum sentence. Matulu is deeply grateful for the board expressing the trust and support. Thanks everyone who has helped him over the years. We ask that you have space and time to be with family when he is released and to continue receiving medical treatment. Welcome home with great joy.
Okay. That's all the announcements. Now I'd like to go over the week in history, and after that I'm bringing our guests. On November 13th, 1839, the Liberty Party, the first anti-slave political party, organized at Warsaw, New York. Samuel Ringgold Ward and Henry Highland Garnett were among the early supporters of the new political party. In 1956, the Supreme Court upheld lower court decision that banned segregation on city buses in Montgomery, Alabama. Federal injunctions prohibited segregation on the buses but served on city, state, and bus company officials December 20. At two mass meetings, Montgomery Black called off the year-long bus boycott. Buses were integrated on December 21st. In 1969, in Chicago, Black Panther Party member Ferguson Jake Winter was murdered by the police on November 14, 1915. Booker T. Washington, educator and national leader, died in Tuskegee, Alabama at the age of 59. In 1960, U.S. Marshals and parents escorted four black girls to New Orleans schools. November 15, 1884, colonization of Africa was organized at an international conference in Berlin from November 15 to February 26 the following year. 1887, Granville T. Woods, patent system for railway telegraphy. 1897, John Mercer Langston, pioneer, black office holder, and former congressman, died in Washington, D.C. at the age of 67. In 1998, Farmer Touré passed in Conakry, Guyana. On November 16, 1873, W.C. Handy, father of the blues, was born in Florence, Alabama. In 1930, Chinua Achebe, Nigerian literary giant, used literature as a weapon against European bias against Africans were born. In 1972, the National Guard mobilized after officer killed two students during Southern University demonstration. In 1996, Dr. Benjamin A. Quarles, former chairman of the Morgan State University History Department and the author of the seminal historical works, died in Prince George County, Maryland at the age of 92. And in 2000, activist Hosea Williams, a former aide to Martin Luther King Jr., died in Atlanta at the age of 74. On November 17, 1983, in Mexico, the Zapatista National Liberation Army is born. November 18, 1803, victory of Haitian revolutionaries and anti-slavery independence struggle, adversaries. November 19, 1797, Jeanne Truth, abolitionist and woman activist, was born. 1863, Lincoln spoke at Gettysburg, but did not mention slavery, denied the equal rights in Louisiana, a government of black and white people in North and South. Now, those couple of events happened in history during this week, but it's more. You know, I'd like to bring in our guest tonight, Sister Shamanika Boykins, known as Shalma Shanga. Peace and blessings, sister. How you doing?
Well, as well. How you doing today?
I'm strong, sister. I'm strong. I'm doing well. I'm beautiful, sister. I'm doing strong. You know what I'm saying? Strong, safe, and sane. I'm beautiful today.
All
how about
right.
yourself?
I would have to echo what you just said. I'm strong.
No doubt. First, I would thank you for coming to our broadcast and show you now your understanding. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for what you can do in the past, present, and the future, right?
Yeah.
Before we get into this, tell the people about yourself before we get into this. Who you are,
All right. You're
from, things of that nature. You know, a little bit about your background,
All right. Who
you are.
All right. Well, peace and blessings, family. My name is Shamanika, also known as Shanga the Medicine Woman. Born and raised here in California, Los Angeles. So many things to say, but I will say this. I am definitely a servant of the people. I have a master's in social work as well as a bachelor's degree. Currently, I'm exercising my space of magic and power in therapy as a doula, doing both birth work as well as grief, death, and dying. I'm a new author, so I'm excited about that. And I hold a strong legacy in the palm of my hands in more than one way. So that's me in a nutshell.
Okay. You know, Evans, you know what I'm saying, one of the co-founders of Georgia University. Tell them about your relationship. Who is he to you? And tell a little bit about the situation, about who he is, you know what I'm saying, what he means to you.
Okay. Well, Papa Don, or who I would affectionately just call grandfather. He actually married my grandmother before I was born. And so he quickly became a very strong part of my mother's life, and in turn was actually the only grandfather that I was able to truly have a relationship with. He used to like to tell this story. When I was growing up, he always had his hands in a lot of things. So the home in which he and my grandmother lived in was his family's house. They had like this really large piece of land next to it where you can put, you know, probably four more houses front to back. But he had a garden out in the back where he used to grow fruits and vegetables and stuff. And I vividly remember this garden in my mind, but he used to like to tell the story that one time he did something that upset me, and I was about 5 years old. And he said that I went and I stomped down his cabbage and his greens in the in the garden. And he went and told my grandmother, Maddie, look at your granddaughter. Look at her. And my grandma was looking out the window. And he said, your grandma, she wants to get you. But I told her, no, don't do that. If she got enough courage and bravery to do that to my greens, she gonna be something special. So that was, even though I remember the garden, but I don't remember stomping his things down. That was really the beginning, at least I've come to the understanding for him. I'm in a relationship and bond that we've carried and nurtured throughout the years. I actually used to think Papa Don was mean when I was a kid, but he was just always busy, always focused with his hands in something. And one of the greatest things that I recognize he gave us was Saturday school. He and his close friend, Brother Ali, they used to pick us up.
Oh, God, Rashid Ali. Rashid.
Yeah, I say. They used to pick us up on Saturdays and take us over and watch to church, and we would have Saturday school. And that was really where I remember like my introduction to things African. I learned, you know, where Africa was. We learned countries. We used to do projects. We had like a little entrepreneurship type situation going on. We used to sell like magnets with black people's faces on it that we painted and everything. That's where it started for me. I always remember those things. And so as an adult in my probably late 20s, after graduating from school, actually before that, Papa Don always showed me what a man was, who he was, and how he was to be for his family. So he always made sure that those he loved were secure, they were taken care of. And I remember in college, my family being in Los Angeles and me going to school in Sacramento, I had to learn the bus schedule because it was vastly different from Los Angeles. Some of the buses there would stop running like 7 o'clock. And I was in school, car, anything. I went through the majority of undergrad without a vehicle. And right when I got into my last year of undergrad, Papa Don was like, nobody bought you a car yet. I said, no, I'm out here thugging on the bus. It's okay. You know, I didn't figure it out. He was just like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. He said, for the things that you're doing, you know, and the strides that you're making, people around you should be helping you as much as they can. And he didn't live in California at that time. He lived in Texas. He drove to Texas, drove to California because he stayed on the road. He could not take his keys from him. He drove from Texas to California, and met me at the Nissan lot to get me a car. It was the first car I ever got. He took me right there, and his reason for that was because, and his reason for all the things that he did for me and for other people was because he said, as a man, as a black man, you have a responsibility to your family and then to your community. And as the man in my family, I'm supposed to be able to take care of those people that I love. Whatever it is that they may need, when they come to me, I ought to be able to fulfill that or at least make it happen in some way. So that was the bond we had. He would call me at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would, of course, always answer because I know that, you know, he's my elder. He's older. He lives in another state. And he'd just be like, "You sleep, girl?" I'm like, "Yes, I am." "Nothing's wrong." "No, nothing's wrong. Just call me when you get up." I used to be like, "Stop doing that to me, Grandpa Don." Stop doing that. But that was us, you know. As I became more consciously aware of the world that we live in, especially being a black woman in America, he was my guiding light. He would just, one time, I don't even know what prompted it, but I know spiritually things were shifting for me. And then he just started sending me books, just randomly mailing me books. And he mailed me some of the most blackest black books that I have on my library shelf right now, just because his thing was, you know, if you get this now at the age you are, my God, to see you when you're my age, you know, and all the things that you'll be able to do and places and spaces you'll be able to touch. So he would just pour into me like that. He used to tell me if he wished he could pour his brain into mine, like all the books that he read, because he would read books over and over again and just have a bed full of books, you know. So he wanted to always pour those things out. And the way that the Most High, how he used to say it, Allah God, used to speak to him was just pouring in his mind, you know. So he always had a new idea, another organization, another entity to be created, another piece of Black America to attend to. It was always running. So he would call me and tell me, and some of the things I would help him put into movement, one of those things being NAFRA, National African American Family Reunion Association. I have like folders full of, because he used to write his stuff on his typewriter in his house. So I have like letters and letters, his call to action, you know, typed from his typewriter, and notes and stuff. The way he, you know, would outline NAFRA and how it would look in each chapter in the city and stuff like that. I was his feet on the ground in Los Angeles for a lot of things. So we got to build a lot of things together. And he started calling himself the father of our nation. So people started picking up on that. And I never battled or even thought twice about that, because for what I saw him do as a black man that is a husband, that is a father, a grandfather, a great grandfather, a great great grandfather, he was just that for everybody that he could, especially when he could see that you had the fire yourself to keep it going, he was gonna pour into you. So that's what he meant to me, was the father of a nation. He definitely embodied that and held that weight up until, you know, it was almost time for him to join the ancestral realm. I'm asking him, you know, like, "Grandfather, how you doing today?" And he's like, "I need to get this $1 billion for black people." And next year they go, "Oh, they need to give us $2 billion. And I'm like, "Grandfather, I'm asking you about you, and you want to tell me what you got to do for black people?" He's like, "Yeah, that's what's happening. So I'll forever love him. And he absolutely has that seat on my ancestral altar, truly.
That's a beautiful story, you know, the brother, the elder, ancestor, 94 years on the globe doing the work, you know, doing the work.
Doing
you know,
the
been
work.
Been inspiration to me and all of us, you know, especially when you came across Abdul Lugabar Security, got together, organized with other comrades, and formatted GJU, Georgia University, where we on right now, the radio platform. You know, I got a question in regards to the Sunday school, right? You know, how was it learning all this new information about our history, about people? What type of experience was it? You know what I'm saying? How was it? You know, what was it, a type of curriculum, or was it, were you just doing things sporadically, or was it a curriculum, or was it spontaneous? How did that go in regard to the Sunday school situation? You said him and Dr. Rashid Ali.
Saturday school was, if they had a curriculum, we as the children didn't see it right out, but it was never sporadic. I tried to ask myself one time, how long do we do Saturday school? It wasn't like a block of time. It was something continuous through the year. We were just going to Saturday school. And I want to say we probably met 3 Saturdays out of the month. And we had a few different things. They would teach us, like I said, you know, we're learning literally about the continent of Africa and then digging into each country. But we also had entrepreneurship conversations. They helped us to create things that we could sell out in the community. We definitely did Kwanzaa all the time. That's something that's regular in our family, just in general. But it was definitely consistent. It never seemed like they were just kind of flying by the seat of their pants on what they were teaching us. They were intentional about us understanding where we came from and understanding the abilities that we had just because we were sitting there in that church, in that back room on Saturdays. And we had a lot of hands-on things that we were able to do for and with Saturday school.
I can dig that. I can dig, you know, the education is always a good place to start in regards to anything that we do. You know, it's also for liberation, liberate our mind, also liberate our people from our conditions. You know, I understand
especially
that,
with us being that age too, because we were not teenagers yet. We were young kids. Brother Ali, I think he had, if I remember correctly, 4 children. His kids were there. All of my grandmother's grandchildren were there. So our age range was probably maybe like 6 or 7 to probably about 13 or 14.
Okay.
So that was a very pivotal time and age to be able to receive that information in the way that they were given it, because Saturday school wasn't like a daunting task. It wasn't like something we didn't want to do. We enjoyed going to Saturday school. They made it fun and educational and empowering, all in one sitting.
That's a real phenomenal, real beautiful, especially in regards to the different ages of youth, because you can teach some youth some things, they can teach the other youth from a youth perspective,
yep,
because they are older, you know. So it was like you're creating an aspect of educating people so they can be to educate other people, educate themselves. You teach people
that's
to teach
right.
themselves so they can teach everybody else, you know, the whole aspect
that's
of
right.
learning, a re-Africanization process. Learning about your ancestors, getting you pride, getting you on love, getting you dedication, getting you determination, other things that that are needed in this world for to survive and do African people, you know. So those are all beautiful things, like, all beautiful thing. You know, I understand that you're basically a woman of all trades, right? You're a master of none. You got your hands a little bit of everything, from authorship, therapist, doula. You're a medicine woman. You refer to yourself as a shaman, you know. You're a creative area organizations. You like travel. You specialize in cognitive behavior therapy, trauma, you know. So you got a lot of different things going on, you know. First thing I want to know about, tell a little bit about your work with the Medicine Womb Man, Inc., and Nana's Afro-Maroon Spiritual Science Awareness. You know, and first off, what actually is a womb man, WMB, and what is that? We can get a better understanding of what you're talking about. What is that?
I love that you asked me that question. Spelled woman that way, because in learning the things that I have learned in regards to the body, the mind, herbs, energy, ancestry, spirituality, all things nature, the one thing that I recognized was, as women, we have become extremely detached from the natural feminine energy that the Most High created us with. And because we have that detachment, we have become detached to our womb. It's something inside of our body. You know, we have a cycle once a month. If we have children, you know, that's really as deep as it goes for a lot of women. We never really get to understand the full capacity and the depth of our womb, in that it is the portal, the only portal that we can touch within our, you know, in our body system, that is a connection, or the portal between this physical world and the spiritual world. And so I spelled woman like that because in all of the works that I do, Medicine Women Incorporated, as well as Nana's Spiritual Science and Wellness Center, we're focused on, not to say that we're not taking care of the brothers, because we are taking care of the brothers. They come through, they get what they need for sure, but we are focusing a lot of our works on the women and their womb, because there's so much that women are housing in that womb space. It's making the womb space unable to produce what it's supposed to do, being children, ancestral energy, and or just birthing projects and things like that. If we are to build a nation, the women must be healthy in mind, body, spirit, and emotion. And if you have a woman who is unbalanced, who is unhealthy in any of those four areas, then she's birthing, because she is the storehouse of every being that's coming through to be a part of our nation and to fill their positioning. If mama's not well, that baby's already being birthed into a very unhealthy energy, environment, and atmosphere. So if we can get women back more balanced and more connected to themselves, their wombs, their hearts, their minds, in alignment, then we have a better chance at continuing the sustainable progression of strong families and community. It's going to start with the mamas, because the mamas are your first teachers. She's your first storehouse. She gives you the first things that you'll need for sustainability. She has to be well in order for the children to be well. So woman is one, it makes you stop and think like, whoa, why you spell it like that? But then after you start to see the works, you understand this is a recultivation of feminine energy in a very grounded and healthy way.
So you serve the same function in both the institutions as a therapist, a doula, and a medicine woman, or you serve different functions at both of them?
Okay. I serve Well, actually, you know what? Let me take that back, because it kind of does overlap, however, with the Medicine Woman nonprofit religious corporation. What I'm doing with that is the umbrella for particularly my piece in the birth work, being a birth doula, and then also the death and dying services. So grief counseling, ancestral work, those types of things are under that umbrella. But over at Nana's, while I still also serve as the person holding position for death and dying, I do also still have my hands in individual healing that takes place here, as well as our lodge. We actually have it's called a Temescali. The function is somewhat the function of what people are most familiar with, which would be a Native American lodge. However, as African people, we've had lodging type of spaces throughout the generations. So what we did was we had a brother of ours come from Mexico. He came and he built the Temescali for us. And we hold sweats there. Those sweats can be dealing with anything from grief to loss to personal healing, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional. We also use it for mamas as a part of postpartum care. We use it for, jumped out of my head because I wanted to say it. Oh, as a mediation space as well. So it has a few different functions, and that's what makes it different from your regular sweat lodge. But it's a healing tool. We use herbs inside. We use essential oils. Sometimes we just use Mami Wata on the stones to give the steam for healing. It's also a tool that we utilized when COVID first hit, because people, whether it was in their minds or in their bodies, they were showing physical symptoms of illness. So we were able to utilize the Temescali, warm it up enough that it warmed up their internal temperature in order for their bodies to do what the Most High created it to do in its natural function. So my hands are also there as well. And then we have a Montu temple here, which is our African self-defense martial art. And so my hands are also in that with my Nzinga warrior tribe, where we're teaching women self-defense strategies, as well as teaching them how to help their money or allow their money to make them money. So we're touching a few different things: finances, health, family, and community.
Okay. You know, for the people who don't know what Mama Wata is, can you tell the people about Mama Wata? What exactly is that Mama Wata, and what type of energy that is? You know, people got to understand exactly what you're talking about when you mention Mama Wata.
Yes, I said Mami Wata. I was speaking of the water, both as a spirit energy, but also as a functioning element. Mami Wata, or water, we tend to just look at it as an element. It's something that serves a purpose. We don't have any extra thought or energy behind how we utilize it or how we take care of it. So the energy of Mami Wata, if you think about the ocean does a lot of different things. The ocean houses a lot of different creations. It makes waves. It also has currents. It can be very gentle and flowing easy, or it could come through and it can crash things down, you know, make space, make canals for new things. So Mami Wata is that mother energy, that nurturing energy that can come in and cleanse and help you renew things, but can also give you stern things when you need to understand and learn the lesson. But as an element, it's the element of water, so it's purifying, it's cleansing. We use that. It's nourishing. You can actually if you took water and looked under a microscope, you would see that your water was actually alive. And I don't mean like seeing creepy crawlies in it. I mean actually get down to looking at the element of water. There's been scientific explorations that you can even, I think at this point you can probably YouTube it, where you can see how if you speak to water, it catches the vibration and it can change the structure of the water. So that lets you know that the water, Mami Wata, the water that you drink, that you use to cook in your food, is alive. You can speak to it and you can have that water when you take it into your body do different things for you. You just have to be mindful enough to actually use your words and talk to it. But there's a few books that you can find on water. My favorite being The Hidden Messages in Water, because that actually shows you when they're saying different words and giving the water different frequencies or playing different music while the water's just sitting there, how the structure of it would change. So that's what I meant when I said Mami Wata. I always like to give water the element and the spirit of water. I like to pay homage to it because we forget. If we don't have water, we die. We can go weeks with no food, but water is a few days, you know. So we have to shift our minds to become more aware so that we can take care of the things that the Most High has given us, and one of them being water.
True, indeed. You know, you said something real interesting that I want to elaborate on, right?
Okay.
In regard, you said you're part of a collective that is a Nzinga self-defense collective. Now,
yes.
You know, this is something for people just to consider within their mind, right? You know, people have always, you know what I'm saying, according to the American mind state, the Western mind state, there's always viewed African women as being docile and weak. But historically, from an African perspective, from our historical perspective, we all had strong queens like Queen Nzinga, Queen Amina, Queen Memorinas,
yes.
And others, Kadakis, Queen Hatshepsut, you know, and so forth and so on, right? You know, so it's always important for people to know that our new African women are not weak, they are not docile, they are not defenseless, they're not able to defend themselves on various levels, politically, social, intellectually, right? You know what I'm saying? That they are powerful women. You know, I just want to elaborate that, you know, and, you know what I'm saying? I want to applaud your efforts for working with that collective in regard to pushing that particular energy, right? You know, especially the energy of Queen Nzinga, who's a warrior, you know, a warrior.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? The European model a movie after her TV show, Xena and the Warrior Queen. You know, that episode been
yes.
Queen Nzinga. It turned into a white woman to depict her, you know, to take basically discredit our ancestors, and you know, whitewater history like they always do, control the momentum. You know what? You know how things go in regard to propagation anyway. You know, but it's always on us, right? Like we're doing right now, control the tempo, control the narrative, and also tell it from our point of view and tell our story. It's on us right now, any opportunity we get to do so. So I applaud you in that. You know what I'm saying? That's a major situation in regard to nation building. You know. Especially being able to defend yourself, a different line of defense, right? So I applaud
that's
in this
right.
situation. You know. But you said self defense. What type of training in particular, or the social learning?
So, thanks to one of my other elders, Baba Amasis Mott, with Montu University for African Defense, what we decided to do with Nzinga Warrior Tribe is, like you said, African women are not defenseless. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to start giving women some easy yet very powerful ways to keep themselves and their families safe out in the world. So Baba Amasis likes to make sure that you are never in a vulnerable situation. So we've learned on the ground techniques, even if, you know, sometimes women get in unfortunate spaces where somebody's trying to assault them sexually. So, you know, the legs moving and kicking and things like that. So we've touched on those types of things, on the ground movement, attacks from behind, around the neck, attacks from the front, you know, shoulders and hands. He's also taught us how to utilize some of our, some people call them sarongs, but like our head wraps as weapons as well to, to stop an attacker, to take a weapon from an attacker. So many things. What else? Then we've also trained hand-to-hand combat, but also weapons. So we go over knife work, stick work, as well as firearms.
Okay. And all this training, was geared to African martial arts, or was
yes.
it geared to it? Okay.
Yes, it has a comedic background.
Okay, I got you. Okay, now my next question is, right, how do you define a medicine wound, man? How do you define that? You know what I'm saying? How do you define that? What is that, per se?
I define a medicine woman as a woman that has a bag full of things that are life-changing, spirit-shifting, and elevating. So for me, as a medicine woman, the things that I embody, the things that the Most High has, the pathways that the Most High has shown me are mine to walk, being birth work, grief, death, and dying. In those two spaces, I'm able to utilize things from my bag, like herbs, knowledge of herbs and how they work in the body for particular things, knowledge on how to work with the body physically, as well as spiritually, energetically. I use sound frequency healing as well. And then I like to have fun, so always love and laughter in the air. For me, sisterhood is a part of that medicine bag, which that helps me to be a medicine woman as well, being able to have those connections with other women who are like-minded and like-hearted and have the same foundation and focus. So in a nutshell, medicine woman is a woman that can attend to the different facets of you in a very holistic way.
Okay, that's understandable. You also are a doula. What
yes.
exactly is a doula? What is the significance of a doula, and how do one become a doula?
All right, so a doula is essentially, if you thought about the realm of the hospital setting, when a mother is in labor, you have the nurse, you have the attending nurse, and then you have the doctor that actually comes in and delivers the baby. So the doctor that comes in to deliver the baby in a more natural and or home setting, that would be your midwife. Your doula would be more like your nurse. She's going to be your advocate. She's going to help you to prepare for your labor and delivery in whatever facet that she, you know, whatever modality it is that she's utilizing. She's also going to have some knowledge on herbs and breathing and different positionings to help mom as well. And then during labor and delivery, her job is to be mama's advocate, to help make sure that mama has everything that she needs to birth the baby successfully and as healthy as possible. And then you have also postpartum care doulas who helps, who assist mom after they've had baby in different ways. For me as a doula, originally I thought that I would be, you know, full spectrum doula, meaning from the time of conception all the way to delivery. However, the last few babies that have come have put me more in the position of postpartum. I've been present for mamas while they were in labor and then more so present for them postpartum. And I'm noticing that what's needed in the realm of the space that I'm moving in as a doula is really the postpartum part, you know, the mental, spiritual, as well as the physical parts needing to be attended to. So what I'm beginning to do as a doula is hold space for mamas and the daddies during during their pregnancy and then labor and delivery and post, and being able to also hold spaces for mamas who didn't have the greatest experiences, hold the spaces so that they can have those dialogues and grieve the things that they need to grieve in order for them to be healthier women and healthier mothers for the children. So I definitely assist my clients with herbs and things like that, but I'm more so noticing I'm leaning more in the focus of the breath work, mind-body medicine, being able to help mamas get into their body so that they can feel it, put their mind into their body so that they can feel it and begin to create a relationship with their body so that they can have the birthing experience that they desire to have. And then also being able to, on the other hand, or in addition to that, be able to show fathers how they are still an intricate piece in the birthing process, and helping both parents to understand what it is that they're experiencing, what's happening during the experience, so that when they get into the places and spaces where it's time for babies to be born, they feel more grounded, they feel more solid in understanding, and they know, you know, things, they know their rights, they know things that are healthy for their babies. For example, in the hospital, when you have a baby, they cut your umbilical cord almost immediately after baby comes out. But what we've come to learn or become aware of is the idea that placenta is a functioning organ inside of mama for the baby. And so after baby is delivered, you want to give time before you cut that cord, because there's blood in there. And everything, antibodies, everything that baby needs to be healthy and strong is in that placenta, because the blood's going around. It's going through the baby's body, through the umbilical cord, into the placenta, and back out again. So you want to make sure baby gets as much of that blood as possible. But hospitals, they cut it immediately, which is a physical, energetic trauma in itself. But they're also cutting off the baby's supply of blood that it needs in order for it to be a fully healthy being. So like those kinds of things, being able to make families aware of those types of things so that they can put parameters in place to have, if you're going to birth at the hospital, have delayed umbilical cord, you know, cutting. Or if you're going to have birth at home, having a birth plan that already outlines what you want to do with the placenta after you birth your baby. So that's one of the pieces that I provide as a doula, is birth plans, and then also birth stories, because I've come to learn that it's important that we know our birth story. And when I say birth story, meaning how did I get here? Because all of that is the energy and spirit in which you vibrate in as you move through your life, and as you move through your family and your community. So I've been able to start catching the moments and catching the stories and things like that to encompass it in a book for children to have. That way, simultaneously, we are also creating a family record, a tangible family record for generations to come. So they won't have to just hear about the stories of Papa Don. They'll have a book from when Papa Don was born into however many more pieces of his story or his life he wants to add after he gets the book in his hands from his parent, and those kinds of things. And just and in that, that's taking us back to the foundation of who we are as Black people, as African people, in a very creative way. So I provide that as a doula as well, those birth stories. But I also provide for my clients medicine dolls, which is how I ended up with Nzinga Warrior Tribe. Originally, here in Los Angeles, there's a community center that every year they do a doll exhibit, and they have different themes. And one year I had a friend send me an email that was talking about them doing an activism-themed doll exhibit. So I made an Nzinga doll for the exhibit, and they accepted her and put her in there. So from that doll birthed the idea of me creating dolls for people who have ancestral dolls. So I make ancestral dolls by hand for people, but then I also make on the other end where the birth is concerned, dolls where mamas and papas can honor children that didn't make it Earthside, or babies that made it Earthside and died shortly after. Because I'm noticing in our community, especially as Black people, one of the underlining things for a lot of things that we see in our community is grief and trauma, and it's not getting addressed. Instead, we have embodied the energy that our ancestors had to embody before, which was take the lick and keep going because you have a job to do. We've never really had the generations before now, never have really had the opportunity to reflect and heal and or just give space for the processing of grief. So it's been kind of handed down through observation and by energy. We have to start to break that in order for us to have more solid communities and a more solid nation. So that grieving process is something that's imperative. And people, what I'm doing is I'm showing people, teaching people, and making it more comfortable to talk about grief, death, and dying. So I make those dolls for the mamas and the fathers to have that process, that grieving process. But then I also make ancestral dolls for people who just want to honor their loved ones and, again, have a tangible family heirloom to pass down through the generations. So in a nutshell, that's what a doula is, and that's my niche in the world of being a doula. And you can become a doula. There's a number of, at this point, because so many more people are interested in having home births and things like that. So there's a number of different organizations where you can find doula training. There is the training that I actually did was based and centered from information from the Black granny midwives in the South. So it was a 4-day training, and they went over everything that you would need to know. So your trainings will be maybe like 3 or 4 days. I've never seen one maybe over a week, but 3 or 4 days, and you are getting immersed in all things birthing natural, as well as information and things about servicing a client in the hospital. So they're going to teach you, you know, about some of the medications or some of the main medications they give mamas, how it's working for her, how it's not working for her. They usually go through some type of herbs and salves and things like that mama can utilize. So it's really well-rounded. So you can find a doula training in your local area. You can just type in doula training, and they'll pop up for sure. And you take the training, and then you usually have to have you need to be in service to a certain amount of mothers in a certain period of time so that you can get that hands-on experience. So what you learned during your training, you can put it into use so that it becomes muscle memory, you know. And that's it. You can align yourself with a organization that does birth work, so then you can get your clients that way. And you can also take the route that I've taken, which is more so my own platform in servicing or providing the service, so you can be your own boss. And that's it. Have a light heart clear mind and a light heart for the people, because that's important. That, let me say one more thing. I'm glad I said that. Let me tell you why doulas and midwives are so important to particularly our community as Black and African people in America. Energetically, we are connected to Mother Earth. Mother Earth is always moving. Therefore, there's an energy that's being created from that movement. That energy goes up through our feet into our bodies, out the top of our heads, and it connects to the sky above, and then it comes back down and moves through the body. We're a channel for God's energy to flow from the earth up into the cosmos. When you have a baby inside of a mother's stomach, that baby's feet has yet to physically touch the ground. So the person that catches that baby when that baby comes out of the mother's body is the person that anchors that baby's energy into the ground, that basically takes the baby and plugs it into the earth. That person is immensely important because the energy and vibration that they carry is then linked to that baby's energy as it gets plugged into the ground. So when you have doulas and midwives, that's why I said have a light heart and a clear mind, you know, love in your heart. You are the welcoming committee. Erykah Badu likes to call herself the welcoming committee. You are the welcoming committee to a spirit from the spirit realm, from the ancestral realm into this physical one. So your heart and your mind in those places and spaces are important. You get to help set the foundation for the nation that we are building. So we need doulas. We need midwives. Both men and women can be doulas and midwives. It's not just, you know, focus on a particular sect or anything like that, you or gender. You can definitely do either one can be a doula or a midwife, but we need them, and we need people who are of sound mind with the right focus and intent, because it's going to create the vibration for the generations that we're working for right now.
Oh, okay. I was just about to ask that question. What exactly would a man be called if the woman's a mill? What would a man be called? Would he be a mill husband? What would he be called?
I never thought about that, because as a doula, you can use it, you know, either way. But as a midwife, I never thought about that. I'm going to say, shoot, mid-father, I guess.
I think I might have seen a term like that, mid-husband, before, but I ain't know what it was. I'm not sure, you know, that's why I'm asking that question, you know.
Yeah, that's funny. Nobody's ever asked me that question, but I've also never thought of it. I've actually seen more men become doulas than I have midwives, so I never thought about that. But I'm going to put that to a poll. I'm gonna ask the people of the world, and I'm gonna see what they say. We need a title for the brothers who fill that space, because they're important too, you know, and they're definitely needed in the space. So I love that. Thank you for asking me that question.
No doubt. Can you tell her what exactly is a therapist? What is a therapist in general? What is the purpose of a therapist in general?
The purpose of a therapist, a neutral party that helps you to navigate your internal conflicts, struggles, and or just help you to find more balance within yourself. A great therapist is not going to attend to you like they are the professional. A great therapist is going to always rely to you as the expert of your life and just assist you with whatever it is that you are needing assistance with. So, for example, sometimes like I said about the grief and trauma, sometimes people, or let's say children, are having behavioral health issues. You know, they're acting out, they're doing extreme things, and it's recommended that they get counseling or they get therapy. They're going to go and they're going to see a therapist, and the therapist is going to begin to help them unpack things. Like you unpack a suitcase, take stuff out. They're going to help them unpack the stuff. They're going to create a safe and comfortable dialogue with the person so that they can feel safe enough to relinquish the things emotionally and mentally that they're holding inside, and you can give them tools to help them in that process. So a therapist is technically, if you would like to really just kind of shave it down and get to the nitty-gritty, a therapist is another type of doula. They're just dealing with the mind and the matters at hand versus being focused on birth and babies. Because what they're doing is they are assisting you or being an advocate for you for the things that you, in the things that you need, whether it be between the two of them or it extends into a network because maybe you need other resources. Your therapist is going to be that person to link you to those resources. They're the outside person in your family that gets to know you in a more in a more comfortable space, a more non-judgmental space, to be able to get you what you need.
Oh, okay. I can get that.
Some people like to say they're a mental health provider. I'm moving away from the word mental health just because it already has a negative connotation to it, and it, you know, Black people tend to have an aversion to that. You know, I ain't crazy, because that's usually what people associate therapists or psychologists with. You know, like, that means I'm crazy, but we're in our communities that is quickly changing, and I love to see it because we, especially as Black people in America, need places that are safe for us to unpack and unload the things that we are experiencing in our communities that are keeping us unhealthy on the inside, which in return is creating unhealthy behavior in our communities.
A lot of behavior is learned, and some of the behavior is become hereditary through genetics. But people passing on down certain types of behavior, you know what I'm saying, they're becoming hereditary now, which is quite interesting. I understand that you're a new publisher and you got a book called Transformation, right? Tell us about your book and how can you obtain a copy of it?
So it's actually an anthology project, meaning it's a group effort. So it's full of stories, poems, and personal experiences written by these women. We all have, I have three pieces written in there. We came through as a collective to create that after a sister friend of mine named Tomika. She had a dream that a group of women would produce this book that would help to change lives. So she put out a video on Facebook, and who wanted to write in a book, and I answered the call. So as a collective, she said we started out with like 100 women. I think we got down to about 20 in the book, but it's a collective of beautiful stories. And the title, Transformations, A Path to We, speaks to what we as women must do in order for our nation to be solid and our communities to be healthy. We have to relinquish the programming that America has embedded within us through our families and then through our own experiences and interactions. And we're actively on the pathway back to we, meaning we're all working together. We're working in our different niche for the same common goal. So that transformation is happening in these stories and the things that the women are sharing in the book. So for me, pieces that I wrote were all based on me being able to give people what I like to call medicine, which is like something to think about, and then the experience, and that's me giving them my personal experience on how I came to this medicine, and then giving them a prescription, and that prescription is something that they can actively take and execute and exercise in their life in real time for them to achieve whatever it is they're wanting to achieve, be it healing, you know, be it focus, self-care, self-awareness, self-healing. So the three pieces that I wrote on, one is The Makings of a Medicine Woman, and it's really, it's telling my story. Like you said, what is a medicine woman? It's telling my story by giving some experiences, but in that piece, I'm really teaching people how to become more consciously aware of not only themselves, but the world around them, meaning nature and the elements and things like that. The other piece is conscious preconception, and I'm talking to the men and women who want to community in our nation by bringing forth children. And I'm opening people's minds to understand that before you ever have a baby inside of your womb that is growing, you've already started preparing the energy. So conscious preconception puts our communities at a greater advantage, in a more elevated, expanded advantage, because if we can get into our minds that the things that I do with my body and to my body are adding to the energy that'll be birthed in my child, that'll be out in this community and in this nation. If we can do that, we are winning right out the gate. So I'm breaking that down. I'm kind of talking about it and helping to expand people's minds. And then because love is, of course, what has created and grown the earth, it's essential in our lives. I figured the other piece would be something that everybody at some level can relate to. So it's called The Blessing of Heartbreak. And I'm, again, sharing my experience, and I give a nice little detailed blow-by-blow on an experience of heartbreak that I had. And then giving people or giving women, whoever reads the book, giving them the tools that I utilize in order to mend a broken heart and ignite my own self-healing and self-awareness, which is what ultimately has helped contribute to the woman that I am today. So again, I give them the medicine, which is something to think about. I give them my story and experience, and then I give them tools that they can utilize to actively address their own emotions and heal their heart energy. So Transformation, a Path to We, people can pre-order it right now on my website, medicinewombman.com. That's WOMBMAN.com. It's going to be the first, it's going to be the pop-up that comes up when you go on the website, and you can order, you can pre-order it right through there. As a collective group, we will have an official release party for the book. We're looking at like March of next year, but right now all the individual authors are able to do pre-sales so that we can get the book out of there, and then culminating with that event as a collective next year.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah. I said, then you mentioned a sister named Tamiko that put it out there. The call.
Yeah.
Is that sister, is she located in the Atlanta area?
She is not. She was in California, but I believe she's in Arizona or Texas now. Last
okay.
name Petrie.
Okay. All right. I understand you got an upcoming event in February called the Back to Nature Yoga Retreat in Brazil, right?
Yes.
What is all this about?
So the Back to Nature Yoga Retreat in Brazil this February is actually a retreat that is being facilitated or initiated, shall I say, by a brethren of mine who goes by Kemetic Yogi, His name is Kameen. And so what he did since COVID, you know, everything's been shut down, so he hadn't had an opportunity to conduct any of his regular retreats. He does retreats in Ghana, Kemet or Egypt, of course, Brazil. So he decided that it was time, since everything had pretty much been lifted. So he put the word out that he was going to be conducting a Back to Nature retreat in Brazil. That retreat is going to be centered around healing. So there will be like a sweat lodge there, some plant medicine. He does Kemetic yoga, so yoga will be a part of the retreat, as well as teaching people some healthy eating habits. So the nutrition will be vegan and raw. And then what I'm going to be doing, I have the fortunate opportunity to participate in, is I will be conducting my first grief workshop. I'll be doing those workshops at the retreat. And I'm nervous about that, but I'm also really excited because it gives me the opportunity to, in a concentrated space, give people some tools that they're going to need once they leave that retreat, because I know that it's going to be life-changing. We know that it's going to be life-changing for people mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. So that's the perfect space to sort of debut my grief workshop, because we'll have enough time to sit with people as they unfold or unpack. Still have community in a great, loving, exciting experience. And it's carnival time, so we're going to get to participate in carnival too. So that's beautiful. That'll happen at the end of the retreat. And that's it. We are hitting the flights. Brazil, we are on our way.
Okay. If a person wanted to be involved, how do they go about being involved in?
They can actually, there's a couple of different ways. So if you have Instagram, a Kemetic Yogi, you can find him at Kemetic Yogi, Kemeticyogi. There you'll find links for all of his events, all of his tours, as well as his retreats and his yoga services as well. And that's also where you'll find the link for the Back to Nature retreat and other retreats that he has coming up.
You're the host of a podcast.
Yes.
The patio politics underneath the patio, right?
Yes.
What is this show about, and how can we access it?
Well, all right. So Underneath the Patio is a show. Where we talk about taboo topics, but we also talk about the topics that hold more weight in our community. And the purpose of it is just to be able to touch on the things that are not normally talked about in our community, but they're important to the health and wellness of our community as well as ourselves as individuals. So we're always having fun on the podcast, but the things that we're talking about are life-changing, you know, mind-shifting. It's a ministry. It's a ministry that's touching a particular audience, and that audience is the audience that has all these things, you know, in their closet, in the back on the shelf, that they don't really get to talk about or hear people talk about. In order for us to create sustainable progression and change in our community, we have to start talking about the things that are like the elephant in the room, you know, or the things that we've been taught generationally to sweep up under the rug, and we're not talking about that. We have to start talking about those things, because those are the things that are creating the ripples of trauma in our community. And those things are causing us to not be able to come together as an effectively functioning nation to be as strong as we are made to be. So Underneath the Patio, we talk about from one end of the spectrum to the other, any and everything in between that's affecting our communities, that's affecting individuals, minds, hearts, spirits, emotions, their families, their bonds and connections with people. We talking about it all. You can find the podcast. A new episode is dropped every Tuesday. This Tuesday, just passed, my interview actually dropped episode 44, Medicine of the Soul, or Medicine for the Soul. You can, if you're on Facebook, you can actually just follow the page and they'll drop the podcast there, because you can visually watch the podcast as well as hear audibly get the podcast. So on Facebook, it's at The Patio, D-A-P-A-T-I-O, Politics with a Z at the end. And you'll find that across all the platforms, including YouTube and TikTok. For TikTok, it would be The Patio Politics with the Z and then the number 6 after. And then you can also find the link for it on my website as well, since it is a podcast that I'm co-hosting. So that's been really exciting. And because it's a dialogue between Black men and Black women, it makes for such a powerful extension of the elevation that's taking place in our community. And it's needed. And I love it. It's a blessing. It's a blessing.
Indeed, true indeed. I'm ready. I know you sent me an episode. I'm going to check it out, see what it's about. Man, check it out. I haven't looked at it yet. I'm going to check it out.
Yes, please.
I got one more question, two-part question. I'm opening the line up for the callers.
Okay.
I understand that you specialize in trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy, right? That deal with your work as a birth, grief, death, and dying doula. What exactly is the therapy, and how did it coincide with your work as a doula?
Okay, so trauma focused is just that, it's particularly focused on things causing trauma. Cognitive behavior is meaning the behaviors, to meaning your mind. So the behaviors that you're executing because of the traumas that you're experiencing. And what the therapy looks like is, so people usually think that in order for them to get some help and or healing in regards to something that they've experienced mentally, physically, emotionally, and even spiritually, that they have to verbally or mentally relive the experiences, not realize, and relive it meaning tell the stories, not realizing that that's just really re-traumatizing you. I'm asking you to tell me the same story of an experience that was extremely harmful to you mentally, but I want you to tell me the story. So that's a very unhealthy way to help somebody unpack their suitcase. So with trauma focused, you're keeping that in mind and you're utilizing different tools to help a person to process whatever it is they're wanting to process or needing to process in the healthiest way possible. In the space of birth and then grief and death and dying, what I'm doing is particularly focusing or at least marketing more, bringing people's minds to the conscious awareness that they've experienced some type of trauma, and then helping them to be able to identify how it's showing up in their relationships and in their life in general, and giving them tools to navigate that. So when I was a therapist out in the world before having my own organizations and things and spaces to move in, we would utilize things like art therapy. So I'd have a client, I'd ask them a question about how they felt and allow them to draw it out. And then we'd have a dialogue about that. In the space of grief, death, and dying, and then also in birth, when we're talking about trauma, I'm giving more hands-on active things. Still, you can utilize some of those same things, you know, art therapy and stuff like that, but you want to do it in a more creative way so that it makes for a more impactful experience. So the dolls that I have are one of those pieces in particular, since this is such a taboo topic, in particular abortion. So because abortions are such something that's looked down upon, usually or most times when a woman experiences or when a woman has an abortion, it's very shameful, which means that she's not really talking about it if she tells anybody at all. That also means that if she allowed herself the time and to process, you know, what her body just went through, what the all of whatever is encompassing that pregnancy at the time, and instead of her having the opportunity to do that, a lot of times mamas are just going on about life. Like, you know, some of them are like, ooh, that's done. You know, some of them are sad about it, but whichever way it is, there isn't a space being held for them to process that and to even understand that they have the right to process that, because it still is a loss and it's still grief. If it was an abortion, they never really got to see the baby or hold the baby, you know, versus, you know, a stillborn where a baby is born, you know, born deceased and things like that. So the dolls that I utilize for mothers who had abortions or babies who've died in utero, they actually get a physical doll that they can go through the grieving process with, and I give them tools. I have a grief herbal tea that they can drink to help address the physical experience and physical signs of grief in the body. They have the doll. We do, I've had mamas take the doll, bury it, you know, in their yard for a certain amount of time just to give them, you know, the experience of a service. And then, you know, doing prayers and just allowing themselves the space to feel however they feel, and then retrieving the babies or retrieving the dolls. You can then put the doll on your ancestral altars in honor of that pregnancy and that being, whether you knew if it was a boy or a girl or not. You still have a physical representation of that being, because that being is now part of your ancestral court, you know, even though you never were able to meet them in the physical world. So things like that, those are some of the tools that I'm utilizing. People don't even think about the fact that when a mama is, she has a particular way her birth, she wants her birth to go. Let's say she wants to have a vaginal birth, but she ends up with a C-section or a cesarean. That's a traumatic experience. One, because you had not prepared your mind or your body for that. But also, two, you're having to deal with the fact that you might feel like you did something wrong or you could have did something better in order for you to have a vaginal birth versus a C-section. So that's a trauma. It makes mothers extremely paranoid, afraid, and discouraged when they get pregnant again, which, again, if you go back to my earlier statements, that vibration is then embedded in that new being. So we have to attend to those things as well. And through that trauma-focused work, I'm able to utilize these tools that I have in order to address those things for mama.
Okay. I appreciate that. I'm going to open the line for the call. We've got about 30 minutes left. I'm going to let the caller ask the question too. 614-285, your line is open. If you got any question, comment, statement, please do put it in time. 614-285, your line is open. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My phone has been acting cool. So the first thing I'd like to ask, sister, daughter, is say your name for me, please.
Shamanika.
Shamanika. Could you tell me what that means, please?
I can. Well, my mother actually took three names and put it together. That was the initial energy behind it. But as I have evolved and, my walk as Shamanika, I've come to learn the way that she spelled it put me on the path in which I walk today. So shamanic and then Ka. Essentially, my name says healer and spirit, or healer spirit. And it, that speaks to the work that I do today. But I didn't know that originally. I didn't used to like my name, actually. I used to ask people to call me something different because it was so long and people would always pronounce it incorrectly. But as I've grown in the walk and in the understanding and comfort of myself, I make sure that people say it and say it right.
I feel your smile. I just have to smile. You're making me smile over here. I'm so proud of you.
Good. Thank you.
My name is Elder Mama Condi. And when you said Shamanika, it was all I could do to keep from bursting out laughing, because I knew what the shaman meant, and I knew what the Ka meant.
Yes.
Mama Condi, that's the spirit within. So I knew what you were gonna say. I was feeling you.
Yes.
I do, for the last 48 years, I've been delivering babies at home for black females only.
Yes.
I don't deliver for anybody except black folk. I've delivered hundreds of babies. I'm 70 now. And
wow.
I don't deliver babies if the ancestors tell me no.
They okay.
And once the baby comes, then I know why I was told not to touch it, you know. And as a result, I have a perfect record. No breach, no strangulation with the cord, no born without a rectum, no all the kinds of things I hear about from other folks. I originally am from Philly, and I used to work with a brother named Rufus Harley. He's the brother that was playing bagpipes, jazz bagpipes, and he and I used to deliver babies together.
Wow.
And I asked the ancestors about this one delivery, and they told me no. And the sister, she was hard-headed, and she wouldn't do anything we instructed for her to do. So I told him, I can't do it. Ancestors told me no. And he begged me, and I wouldn't. I said, I'll be on the phone. You know, you can consult me, but I'm not allowed to be there. And sure enough, little sister was born without a rectum.
Wow. Wow.
So all of the deliveries I've done have all been successful. I've always made sure that I meet the person. I have a deadline. If I don't know you, I'm not touching you. And if you don't do what you're instructed, I'm not touching you. When sisters do what I instruct, everything goes extremely well. Everything goes well. And there's also prenatal things, and we make medicine out of water. Go down to the river so many days, do our prayers, and when the jar is full, that's the medicine the sister takes. A jar of her prayers.
Wow. Wow.
So I'm really enjoying you.
I need to enjoy you some more.
I'm really enjoying you, sweetie, and I'm proud of you. I got tears in my eyes. I'm going to keep you in my prayers, you know, for your safety in doing this work, because some of our people are not well.
That's right.
Emotionally and mentally, and either your ancestors teach you what bullets to dodge, or you cover your butt in your paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying to you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I'll keep you in my prayers, meditations, and in my high mind so that you come out with a track record like mine.
I appreciate that. I need to talk to you some more, though, Mama. Can I reach for you?
Yes. Brother Bomani has my contact information.
Okay.
And when he gives it to you, contact me through my text messages.
Okay.
My phone is a disaster. And
okay.
I'm blind now.
Okay.
I'm blind now. So, There are ways to make the broken phone work, and ways to help me be able to communicate with you in spite of my blindness.
Okay, I got it. Many blessings to you. Such an honor to make your acquaintance today.
Bless you, sweetie. Bless you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Bomani. I yield.
Okay.
Unless you had something else you wanted to say to me, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm going to get your contact information. We're going to go from there.
Oh, that'll be good. That'll be
all right,
good.
I look
that'll
forward to
excellent.
It.
And I'm looking forward to hearing from you. I should text instead of calling because my phone doesn't tell me who's calling.
Okay.
So I might not get your call, but I would get your text message.
Got it. Duly noted.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, Bomani, thank you.
Hi.
I yield.
Hi.
Unless,
hi.
Unless you
you're welcome.
Don't have any other callers, but if you do, I'm out. I'm going to sit and listen.
Well, I actually had a, let me see. No, they dropped off. Yeah, you can ask another question. I probably got 20 minutes left. You ask another question.
Okay, thank you. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm gonna ask anyway. Do you ever deliver babies that are not African?
My hands have not touched any of those babies, no, ma'am. Many blessings to them, though, but my hands have not touched them.
I know that's right. I, let's see, she's one of my daughters. She's 42 now. And her first baby, I was in solitary confinement under fraudulent charges, and she was pregnant, and it traumatized her because she just really didn't know what to do, and we didn't know when I was going to get out. Well, I won my case, by the way. And so she had made arrangements at a hospital, but she was hoping that I would get out before she was due to have her baby. And I was out maybe 3-4 days before her baby came. And so I go to the hospital, and they have this big delivery room. And it's me, her sister next to her, 2 years younger than her, and her sister 4 years younger than her. and it's me, and we're all sitting in the room. And I had a gallon of delivery herbs for her to drink. And they had this needle in her hand and trying to retard say the words for me. Contraction. And they couldn't explain anything to me. So every time they would walk out of the room, I'd give her sips of these 4 quarts of delivery herbs. They'd come back in. He's up, going to the bathroom. And so finally, after she had finished drinking the second quart, the nurse comes in. She's suspicious. What are you doing? I said, don't talk to me like that. This is my child.
That's right.
This is my child. She came out of me. So whatever I'm doing obviously isn't any of your business. This is between me and my child. Well, I know you must be doing something because we got her on ice and this intravenous thing and it's not doing what it's supposed to do. That ain't got nothing to do with me. That's on you. That's your stuff. I don't use none of that stuff.
That's so right.
I don't know what you're talking about. When the next time she came, my daughter was crowning.
Wow.
Next time the nurse came in, doctor comes in, and he almost dropped my grandchild.
Ooh. Ooh.
These people are crazy. So
yes, they are.
Her sister says, oh, I'm not having my babies in the hospital. That nailed that. And she got a chance to see what a beautiful experience it is to have the baby at home. Yeah, I had all my babies at home. I delivered them myself, and I'd invite 35 sisters to come and be part of the experience.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He said, Mommy, I'm not going to do that again. I said, well, I understand. I get it. You know, I'm locked up. What can you do?
So. You said you delivered all of your own babies?
Yes, I did. And I'd invite other sisters so they could learn, you know, how to do it by witnessing it. What did you say?
What put you on the path to being a doula? Who taught you?
My ancestors.
I was going to say, besides your ancestors.
besides my ancestors. That's
okay.
The part. That's
Come on,
deep.
Say it. Yes.
My first husband, he had 3 children from a previous marriage. They were present. He was present. I was present. And he was kind of scared that first one. But when it came time for the next one, he was good to go.
Perfect.
The little daughter at the time, she was like 3, and she kept picking her head in the room and picking her head through the door in the room and picking her head in the room. And then when she saw her little brother come out, she just, oh, wow. I'll never forget that. She just said, oh, her name is Amoke.
Amoke.
She just thought it was the most amazing thing, you know. And our children, when we go into these other people's environments, we don't get to have the experiences that are natural for us.
That's right.
That's another reason why I said I'm proud of you, because it's important that we develop spiritual relationships between us
and between us and our ancestors. Also, I make ancestral dolls. And
are you kidding
me? I'll tell
me?
You where to go and look. I make ancestral dolls. You can see them. I got them on the internet on my website.
You are a jewel in my life, honey. I have not met anyone else making ancestral dolls outside of myself. And my ancestors are the ones that said, put your hands on that. I've been looking for somebody else, like, who else is doing this? Let me learn. And I was like, no, you're doing so that you can show and teach. And I was like, okay.
There you go. There you go.
Wow. Wow.
So that there's a lot of territory that you covered. And anything I can do or say or pray for you to be of service to you, don't hesitate to talk to me.
Okay.
You can ask me anything. Absolutely.
Okay.
Anything.
Wow.
You learned that.
Thank you. Wow. All I got for you, Mama, is wow. My hands are in the air, honey. I am eternally grateful for this connection today. You are one of the missing jewels in my medicine box. So thank you. Thank you, thank you.
I've been looking for another young person who wanted to learn from me before I pass on and take it with me. You know.
Well, we can't let you do that, so I'm right here. I'm here.
I'm glad you finally made it.
Right.
Because, you know,
it did take me a while, but we're here.
To anybody, you know. There are gifts that are not meant for everybody.
Yes. Wow. Wow. Where are you located?
You said you've written a book. I've written 11 books.
11? Come on.
And I sing in 13 languages.
Wow.
A lot of those are prayers.
Come on, teach me. Just teach me.
We're going to have some fun.
Yes, we are. I'm on my way to you right now, and I don't even know where you are. But at the same time, I know where you are, and I'm on my way.
Know that's right. Bless your heart, your beautiful spirit.
Thank you so much.
I'm so proud of you.
Likewise.
I just got tears in my eyes. Wow.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you for being another confirmation of the Most High that I am where I'm supposed to be and doing what I need to be doing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, my November is made.
I'm just sitting here smiling right now.
Oh, no, I'm giddy. I forgot that we was recording a radio show.
Bomani loves these real moments.
Wow.
Moments. It's one of the things I appreciate about him.
Yes.
He really likes the real moment.
Well, honey, we are definitely having a real moment. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I don't know where you found her, Bomani, but thank you. You on it.
That's Papa Don.
I'm proud of you, bro. You on it.
No doubt. You know, I do what I can do.
Yeah.
Yes, many blessings.
You did really good this one.
Now you making me blush, and I'm chocolate now, okay? You're turning me into a chocolate strawberry right now.
Oh, that's beautiful. You earned it. You know? We've been talking about what you do, and that's the whole idea. If our people are going to grow
and build. It's got to be based on what we do. I mean,
that's right.
You, but what do you do? What have you done? You know?
Yes.
And what you going to do? So that's what it's got to be based on. And that's what you've been talking about. I said, oh, she's a doer.
As much as I possibly can, I am a doer. Yes, ma'am.
That will work. And what I've enjoyed with this delivering black babies thing is all the different ways it happens. You know, because in the hospital, they just put you up on the bed and put your legs up in the stirrups and... In delivering babies at home, oh, we have sisters who will walk a mile throughout the house and then go over to the mattress, squat or stand, and, you know, have to have a sister ready to catch and, you know, and to just stand right back up and continue walking.
Yep.
And then you have another experience where one sister, she squatted the whole time. Or another sister, you know, she wanted to lay on her side. And another one, you know, everybody has their own style, you know, that comes out of them when they're living their baby. And
that's
I've seen all colors of fluids, red and maroon and green. Green really tripped me out.
I was going to say,
you know,
green, woo, okay.
The more say green is the original color on the earth, green.
Yes.
So when I saw green come out of this child, I said, Lord, have mercy. Ain't this interesting?
Wow.
And you were talking about woman. I found that interesting because the more say female, white girls then trick black sisters. They tricked us. They got us thinking they're female and we're woman. And that nothing could be further from the truth. We're not a man with a womb. We're female.
Yes.
Free.
Receive.
And we're not free anything. We are.
That's right. That's right.
So we got to flip that back over again.
Receive.
But I'm proud of this because they at least knew something was wrong.
Yes.
And they flipped it and owned woman. I get it. But a man, that's one of those white people. You know.
I say.
The first black person who is a brother is a male. And
I say.
He come from the sister. So she's a female, pre-male. And, you know, white girls ain't pre-nothing. So we can see that mind clearly.
Yes.
And a lot of the words in English originated from the Moors. And they changed those words. So it's harder to make the connection.
I'm
done.
Yeah, we got less than 5 minutes left. You know what I'm saying? I would like to get the guest final thought. What are your final thoughts you want to leave it with? So, really, kind of information or quote or some philosophies, whatever you want to do. You know, it's on you.
Whew. Well, all right. Y'all just blew me into the next evolution of myself, and I had to catch up to that. Okay. But I am grateful. I first want to say to you, Brother Bomani, thank you. Thank you for the love, the reverence, the respect, the value, and the care that you have for and gave to my grandfather. It is men like you who helped him continue for 94 years. Anytime he met a black man or a black woman who had the energy that the youthfulness of his soul could connect with, excuse me, it gave him more life and more purpose and more drive in his purpose. So many blessings to you, Black man, to your family, to your ancestors, to your lineage, and to all of the things that you hold near and dear to your heart. I send you love and an immense abundance. As far as me, the way to reach me, my social medias are there. Excuse me. Instagram is medicine, the number 4, and the word evolution, so medicine for evolution. And then TikTok and my personal website would be the same, medicinewombman.com, so medicinewoman.com. If you're looking for a doula, service you hands-on, or even just in the therapeutic realm, you know, processing your experiences, working with your partner in order to create a more cohesive unit between the two of you. Before, during, or after baby, reach for me. If you've had any type of traumatic experiences in your laboring process that you would like to unpack and be able to come to a balanced resolve about, please reach for me, as well as death, doula, or death, dying, and grief services. I say grief outside of death and dying service because when we think about death, we only really reminisce and feel the effects of the loss of the person, but we never really attend to all of the ways that it impacts us, and it impacts us under the umbrella of grief. So you can also be grieving not the loss of a person, but the transition of a pet, the transition in employment, grieving the old version of yourself as you evolve and step into the newness of you, as well as grieving.
Parcel, sister, we got like a minute left, so, you know, I wanted to cut you off, right?
I got you. I appreciate it. Reach for me. Those are my platforms. That's the way to find me. Otherwise, the sparkle in the sky, just call my name. I'll hear you.
Okay. Again, I want to thank you for coming to our podcast. So you're not a real understanding. Thank you for what you're doing in the past, present, and future. And also, one of the comrades, Freedom, said your grandfather was an amazing warrior. Okay. If anyone has any comrade, little one, switch behind enemy lines, please look into Georgia University. You can find it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you want to contact us directly. You can contact us through email by contacting georgiauniversity71@gmail.com. Again, it's georgiauniversity71@gmail.com. Law of the resistance, law of the African independent movement, free to land. Peace.